This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Oh, good day, me oh my crawfish pie. It is a tremendous Wednesday, and we are outside. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh on the road, but we didn't have to travel very far today as we are broadcasting live from inside MLT Moore Field at Russo Park. That's right, home of the Louisiana Raging Cajun baseball team, nationally ranked Raging Cajun baseball team. And we got a tremendous Cajun-flavored show lined up for you today. Good day to you. I'm the big, bald, bearded, and beautiful one, Raymond Parch III. I'm joined here at the Teague by Son of Iceman, yes. Louisiana Raging Cajun grad.
Certainly.
D to the low, Dawson Iserlo. Good day, sir.
Good day. We're also joined by James Mesh, of course. You talk about his hair often. I don't usually tend to throw that title in. And we're also joined by the Leaf Blowers. We thought we'd gotten through it in the morning. Opened up the windows. We didn't. So if you're hearing anything in the background, although I think we should be good because it's pretty distant.
But. I think they. If you were wondering, if you're tuning in today and you're thinking to yourself, man, I really need to know if the Leaf Blowers at the Teague are very thorough.
They are.
They are. When I say they are meticulous, they go inch by inch, foot by foot, and they make sure this place looks immaculate. It does look amazing. The sun is out. Boy, I just want to get down on the field and play a game of baseball, boys.
The turf looks freshly vacuumed, as I like to say, when it's turf instead of grass. But really, and they did, by the way, you know, the whole resurfacing, and it really does look great. It's got kind of a brighter hue to it now, and
I think it
looks awesome. So the field looks great. The pine trees here, the teak pine trees, I know they're active on Twitter. They're always getting into chicanery, but it's a great day.
That is... You saw what he just did there?
He tossed it out there.
He just tossed it out there. That fancy word from that fancy education that he has. Throwing out those $5 words. I know our guy Ralph will be appreciative of that. But will our guy back in the IFCO Development Studios, his name, his government name, the name his mama gave him is Blake Purser, but he goes by BP. Buddy, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. It's a little dark in here. It's been a little lonely and quiet, but we're making
it. Turn off the lights?
Yeah, the lights are off, and I just haven't had a chance to go turn them back on in the studio, so staring into nothing.
No, and I'll tell you, I did it. I remember it vividly. Sunbelt Media Days had the whole empty studio for the whole day. It'll get to you. At some point, you kind of start going, man, who am I going to talk to? Nobody. You're just going to sit there in the studio. So hang in there, buddy. It's only for a day.
I'll be there soon.
Yeah, before you know it. We do have an absolutely jam-packed show, of course.
It's a special
kind of Cajuns edition here, obviously being live at the Teague. Baseball team's going to play a midweek game tonight against Houston Christian, who's coached by a former Astro great, Lance Berkman. So that's interesting. Storyline weaved into tonight's game. Cajun softball with a massive win last night. I mean, had to have it and got it against LSU and got it comfortably, 9-4. That game, they had a chance to 10-run rule them or 8-run rule them, at the very end. And up LSU put a couple runs up and made it a little bit closer than that. But you heard Coach Glasgow talk with Kevin here on Footnotes just a few moments ago. A lot going on, and we're going to talk a whole variety of different sports here today. The lineup is quite diversified, James, when you talk about the going from the diamond to the gridiron, everywhere in between. But it should be exciting because we're not only going to mix it up, too, not only a mixture of sports, mixture of past and present as well.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So we got coming up 15 minutes from right now. He is the pitching coach for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. He was a great ace in his own right back in the day. Gunnar Leger will be joining us live here at the Teague. Then right after that, at 11:30, we got the man in charge of the Louisiana Raging Cajuns football team. By the way, spring football is wrapping up this week. The spring game will be Saturday inside the indoor facility. They had to push it to the indoor facility because of the construction renovation project going on with Cajun Field. Got to see that from the viewpoint of up here inside Russo Park, and it looks phenomenal. You can start to see the vision. They're starting to put together the temporary press box structure on the other side. So we'll talk spring football with Coach Dez. He'll be joining us at 11:30. Then in hour number two, back-to-back-to-back guests, three of them. How about a guy whose number is retired? You get to see it inside Cajun Field. He's in the Raging Cajun Athletics Hall of Fame, and he has a new job as an analyst for the Louisiana Voodoo, who open up their season in the AFL inside Blackham Coliseum this Saturday. Damon Mason will join us to kick off hour number two. Then it'll be the voice of Louisiana Raging Cajun softball. He's also the football team sideline reporter. Our old friend Cody Juno will be joining us. And then 12:30, we'll have a local product, one of the greatest to ever do it. He played in three straight state championship games at Turlings Catholic. He won back-to-back as a junior senior, came and played 3 years for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. He was a star shortstop. He's now making his way up through the minor league ranks. Hayden Cantrell will be joining us as well. So we got a tremendous show for you today, but we're going to start off today's show like we always do at this time. It's time for today's specials.
The fellas can't help you with your lunch plans, but they can serve up the top stories of the day in bite-sized pieces.
Order up.
Time to order up today's specials on RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
So it's going to be a big week, really, for Louisiana Raging Cajun baseball. Tonight's the beginning of it, but that's kind of the appetizer into what the weekend will be. Of course, they went to Coastal over the weekend and had a bit of a tough one. Lost game one handily on Friday night, had the doubleheader Saturday because of the weather that moved things around, and really played a great day of baseball. You talk about competitive games back and forth, two heavyweights going at it. That's what it was. The wind, of course, blowing out over in Conway, as it tends to do, the ball flying out of the yard. And the Cajuns got themselves a gritty win in game one, but ultimately fell in the series finale and lost the series 2 games out of 3. But the RPI still went up, and they still have a lot to look forward to, and a 4-game lead in the conference standings. One of the threats to that 4-game lead is the Southern Miss Golden Eagles, and they'll be coming to town. That's a rivalry. You talk about the realignment of the Sun Belt Conference, the natural rivals, maybe the lack thereof, ULM and the Cajuns. It's a rivalry, but really is it? Cajuns have kind of dominated a lot of those series, and it's not necessarily, you know, the most invigorated fan base to go back and forth with. Southern Miss is kind of filling that void in some ways, and they are becoming the Cajuns' most natural in-conference rival, I think. And so they'll be coming to town. We know the history of the baseball programs. The Golden Eagles have hosted regionals of late. They ended up sending LSU home a couple years back. They're always near the top, and they're a little bit in transition this year. Southern Miss, maybe not quite as far along as we thought they'd be, but they still find themselves tied for second place in the mix to be a regional team and really looking to add to their resume when they come in to Russo Park over the weekend. All that, though, has to wait for tonight's game against Houston Christian, where the Cajuns will face Lance Berkman, the former Astros slugger, who is now the head coach in charge of the Houston Christian Huskies, formerly known as Houston Baptist. They've had an up-and-down season, but in the Southland Conference, a team that McNeese is familiar with that I've seen a few times this year, they can really swing the bats. So it's going to be a challenge for Cajun pitching tonight. Can they go out there, work effectively? We'll see what Coach Deggs' plan is to kind of navigate that. But all in all, should be an exciting night tonight that leads into a massive 3-game set. And, of course, as we've already talked about, basically the busiest sports week of the calendar, at least in our local area, our local footprint that includes the New Orleans area with the Zurich, the draft, Festival International, Cajuns baseball, all those different things going on. So should be a busy week ahead for Coach Degg's team, but a chance to make another resume statement if you can win a series against Southern Miss.
And then looking at the softball team, they had a game last night against the LSU Tigers. Of course, if you remember, they played them last week, but it was on the road at Tiger Park. They ended up losing that one 4-2, so you're wondering, are they going to be able to get their revenge at home at Yvette Girard Field at Lamson Park? Well, it was kind of, you were kind of confused on whether they were able to do so or not, because they went down 2-0 at the top of the first. LSU got out to an early lead, and you were thinking, okay, how are they going to be able to respond? Because Sam Landry wasn't having her best stuff. She gave up the 2 runs, and then Coach Jerry Glasgow went to Chloe Riaceto, the left-handed pitcher, after that, and she stayed in for the remainder of the game. But the Cajuns, they were able to respond not over the next couple of innings, but it was just the first inning overall, because they were able to put up 6 runs. And by the end of the first, they were up 6-2. They were able to tack on a couple more in the following innings in the fourth as Alexa Langlers and Brooke Ellistead hit back-to-back home runs. We almost thought we were going to see back-to-back-to-back homers and then eventually actually get a run rule, but it didn't come down to that. LSU was able to get up another two runs with a two-run shot. I thought that Maya Davis had caught that ball to end that game, but she wasn't able to. But the Cajuns were able to come out on top 9-4. Good hitting from pretty much everyone. Maya had two hits. Maddie Hayden, she had one hit, but she had quite a few big catches out in left field. You saw quite a few other players get it. And then Chloe Riacetto, she came in, like I said, at the bottom or late in the first inning, and she went 6 1/3. She only allowed two runs. Two of them earned, of course, on that two-run homer. Three total hits. She only had a couple of strikeouts, but overall, she really forced a lot of ground and flyouts to really force that LSU offense to not really do much outside of that first inning, and they were able to improve on the season and help themselves in the RPI rankings. Now they'll play again tonight. They have to go to Lake Charles to take on the
Los Angeles Calgary. Lake Charles.
Yeah.
Same difference.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, was it Chuck Vegas as
exactly
Jim Gazzola would say? So that one's an interesting matchup because McNeese is also very good, 33-15 on the season. That one's going to be a very interesting matchup, like you said, trap game. So you got to make sure that you're not too high on last night's game.
And finally, my special for today involves a raging Cajun who gets another opportunity. Spencer Arrighetti was a great pitcher here for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. He's been part of the Houston Astros minor league system, and he got called up earlier this year, and it was a little rough, right? He's appeared in two games for the Stros, who are in desperate need of competent arms because of the rash of injuries they've had to their rotation and the fact that their bullpen is, well, kind of hot fire garbage right now. Two appearances, 0-2 in those two games. ERA is 11.57. He's given up 11 hits, 5 walks, and he struck out 8. But he gets an opportunity. Getting called back up. Remember, he came up for two games. Then Spencer got sent back down to Sugar Land as they were making room. It was for Verlander being called up after he was coming back from injury. And now he gets another chance, and they need him. And they need a strong outing from him. J.P. France was good after he got out of the first inning yesterday. He was solid for about 4 innings. The problem was that he got shellacked in the first inning. And the Astros, who right now sit at the bottom of the American League West division standings, yes, they're worse than the Oakland Athletics. Try to wrap your brain around that. They are on the struggle bus, and they need something to go their way. They need some positivity, and it just seems like to me that this is just coming together. There's nice it's being serendipitous, if you will.
There we go.
Oh, see, that's a good fancy college word. Is they have the opportunity here for Spencer Arrighetti to go out there and have a great start tonight when he's on the bump. He can hopefully get his first win. He can help the Stros get a win and get on track and give them some stability with their rotation, which is so in flux right now because of the rash of injuries they've had to it. And they're going to be – he's going to have the opportunity also for a very cool moment. He's going to be pitching inside Wrigley Field. First place I ever saw a baseball game was Wrigley Field. 18 innings, by the way. Cubs, Expos. I'm dating myself there. Greg Maddux started the game. He didn't finish it, if in case you were wondering for the Cubbies. They had Sandberg, Dawson, Grace. The Expos had like Delino DeShields and Marquise Grissom and Larry Walker. I think Pedro was on that team.
Ty Cobb playing that one?
Ty Cobb did not. Neither did Joe DiMaggio either. So Gary Carter, neither. He played for the Expos as well. So it's a great opportunity. You can listen to that game. You can listen to the former Raging Cajun take the bump tonight. Astros at Cubs. Pre-game begins at 6:10. That, of course, is Astro Launch with Robert Ford and Steve Sparks on the call. Then first pitch 6:40, and you can listen to that live right here on ESPN 103.7 Lafayette, 104.1 Lake Charles, your home for the Houston Astros in Southwest Louisiana. So best of luck to Spencer Arrighetti as he tries to get his first win as a big league pitcher. We got to take a timeout. When we return, we're going to talk to someone who knows a little something about pitching. How about the man who's in charge of pitchers for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, Gunnar Leger, joins us live right here at the Teague. You're listening to RP3 D'Lo and Mesh on ESPN, Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
And we welcome you back into RP3 D'Lo and Mesh here. We are live from Teague Moore Field, Russo Park, for a special kind of Cajuns edition of the program. And we now have our first guest of the day. The pitching coach for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns was an All-American on the mound that we're looking at right here in his own right. Gunnar Leger now joins the program. Gunnar, first of all, thank you for making the time.
Yeah, man. Thank you all for having me.
And so, you know, look, we've got a unique perspective up here from where we're sitting here in the visiting radio booth, looking out onto the field. You know, you threw a lot of innings on that mound right there and have a lot of big memories and some great times there. What are kind of the first emotions that you think of when you think back to what you accomplished on the mound?
Oh, man. I think a cool thing for me being here, as long as I was, I got the opportunity actually to obviously pitch in the old stadium, and then I made the first start when the new stadium opened. So that was that. I always think back to that. I just how cool that is to be a part of that. As long as the old Teague, you know, stood, and how special it was to so many people, and how many memories there were in that stadium, and then obviously, you know, all the ones that are getting created here.
And, you know, we got to talk to Hayden Cantrell, and we'll air that later today. And we talked to him a little bit about Coach Robichaux, and you two were teammates under Coach Robe. And obviously, you know, it's been a bittersweet time, right, and just appreciating what he did, but having to try and move in a different direction when Coach Deggs got here. What was that like for you, experiencing it firsthand? And then, obviously, now it ended up a couple years later, you joining the coaching staff with Coach Deggs.
Yeah, no doubt. Coach Deggs actually recruited me here when I was coming out of high school. So we had had a relationship prior to me getting here as a coach. And I would honestly say that you know, had a big part in me being able to get on board here was our prior relationship. And he recruited me for, probably about a year, and then obviously committed to him and Coach Deggs, and committed to that coaching staff before prior to him leaving for Sam Houston. So he's been great, man. He's been great to me. I can't think of anybody that fits this place better, that represents this university better. And obviously with how you know, Coach Robe left, and obviously his passing was so sudden. That's a tough gig for somebody to step in and replace somebody like that meant so much to this community and obviously this school and this organization, this program. But he's done it, you know, he's passed that test with flying colors.
And so now as we get into what you've done already as pitching coach here, it's been an impressive year. We heard all offseason about how many arms there were, the depth of guys, all the different roles that they were going to be able to play out. Mm-hmm. And I was skeptical at times of some of the roles that were discussed, of who's going to be starting, and LP is going to be in the bullpen, he's going to be closing, he's going to be starting again. And yet now you have a run of dominance that you guys had, winning 16 games in a row.
Yep.
You go to Coastal, and it kind of goes the other way. Now going into it, look, Coastal's one of the best offenses in the country, and that ballpark is not exactly pitcher-friendly. But
from your
perspective, you know, Ehrman has a struggle in the first inning. Chase Morgan more the same.
Yep.
For you, was it more of a game plan approach that just didn't work out for you, or, you know, guys just maybe not executing? I know there were some tight strike zones in there. What do you think happened at Coastal?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, they're extremely, extremely talented. I mean, they're about as good as it gets, you know, from an offensive standpoint. And then obviously that park, they play really well to that park. You know, I think for Herm, obviously it's never on the umpires, but I think Herm benefits from having a little bit of a wider strike zone and maybe, you know, has gotten some of the calls that he didn't get Friday night. And so he kind of gets squeezed to the middle of the plate. And, you know, credit to him, he attacked the middle of the plate with some of his best stuff that day, right? I would say that he definitely didn't have his best stuff that day, but, you know, he went over the plate and they didn't miss, man. You know, they had some extra base hits. Obviously some walks didn't help us, some errors didn't help us. Like I told somebody the other day, I mean, that was basically two heavyweights throwing punches. You know, if they were to get off to that start against us, I would say that game would look similar. It just flipped, right? If Herm were to settle in for four or five innings and then you go to LP and, you know, we got a 4, 5, 6, 7 run lead, that game's probably over just equally as you know, ours was that night. So it just kind of is what it is, man. Baseball's funny. When you think you got it figured out, you don't. You get punched in the face. But like I say, credit to them. The one thing they did to us that really a lot of people haven't done this year is they squeezed us in the strike zone. Our guys do a really good job of executing pitches, you know, strike the ball, where it looks like a strike, it ends up being a ball, and they kind of swing at our pitch. And they didn't swing at our pitches. You know, they kind of forced us into the zone, and they swung at their pitches and didn't miss.
And does the approach change at all? Because I've always been fascinated by it. Obviously, we know Teague Moorfield plays pretty big, especially if the wind's not blowing out, and you can get away with some hard-hit balls in the air. Now, when you go to a park like Coastal and you know it's going to be offensive-based, I guess it helps if you throw a bunch of sinkers and get ground balls anyway, but if that's not your game as a pitcher, it's not your game. So does the approach change, and do you tell the guys, look, we're going to have to approach this differently because a hard-hit fly ball is out of here, whereas at our park it might be caught in center?
Yeah, no doubt. You may not pitch up in the zone maybe as much. The one thing about Coastal, and this is really how they've always hit, it's really the hitting coach over there who does a great job. Their swings are pretty steep. It's more what you see in professional baseball, right? They're trying to get the ball in the air. Approach angles are high. They're trying to hit doubles and homers, and obviously that plays very well in their ballpark. So down in the zone is maybe not always best there, as you would think, right, with like a traditional kind of old-school sinker baller. They match that plane pretty well. They match that pitch well. So you actually – you really need to be able to execute velo kind of middle to up in the zone. Ideally, you get some swings on some breaking stuff out of the zone that they can't get up in the air. And that, again, that's what they did a good job of taking against us. And I think, you know, us trying to get some swings on some fastballs up in the zone ended up leading to some walks and some things like that, which that was really the main game plan, was eliminate the freebies, walks, errors, hit by pitches, stuff like that. And obviously the two games we lost, we were lopsided on that. So it really just didn't go our way. Obviously Friday night was a combination of walks and errors. And then they get some timely hits, and then Sunday, man, we just, you know, that's like a football game where it's who's got the ball last. That's who's going to win, which I kind of expected to be one of those games would be that way. Unfortunately, we just couldn't make the big pitch when it mattered.
We're talking with Gunnar Leje, former All-American ace here for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. He's now their pitching coach. He joins us here on RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as we broadcast live from the Teague. I want to go back because you played for not one but two of the most legendary coaches this state has ever produced. Mm-hmm. I want to go back and talk about your high school coach because Glenn, he's kind of a character in a lot of ways. He's got a big personality, but the results speak for themselves. He's one of the most decorated and championship-winning high school coaches this country has ever produced.
Yep.
Well, what was it like playing for him at Barb High School?
The one thing that Glenn is very, very good at outside of the obvious is knowing the game and being able to coach the game and do things like that. He will he'll make you believe you're better than you are, and he'll instill a confidence in you that I think you can see now. He's built a brand, right? And when they show up to play people, they almost already have a 3-run lead just because they have Barb across their chest, right? And you see similar things with LSU and with us when in the 2014 team. And when we're rolling, right, I think we have the capability to do that, especially in this place when our crowd gets rocking. So I think that more than anything, he just, you know, he'll tell you when you're struggling, right? I mean, he challenges you, right? It's not just all, you know, peachy and rainbows, but I think he does a good job of instilling a level of belief in yourself and a confidence as a team and as a unit that I've seen very few people be able to do.
Now, you were an All-American in high school, so you were one of the best out there. You probably could have gone so many different places. How early in the process did you know that coming to play for Coach Robe was going to be the right spot? And how much did that relationship between Glenn and Tony, because they used to be college roommates back in the day, how much did that play in a role with the familiarity between you and coming here?
Well, honestly, I was recruited pretty late. I was kind of a late bloomer. I didn't really get recruited really until my junior year in high school. And so, you know, I had a handful of offers from Rice and some other in-state schools and some walk-on spots at maybe some bigger places. But once UL came knocking, and obviously at that point they were rolling in 13 and 14. and then honestly, man, I my entire career, I attended Coach Robe's pitching camps when I was younger. And
there it is.
And knew the family. I remember Justin being one of the coaches for the camps, and I'm running around here, the old Teague. So there was just a familiarity with this place in general. I mean, the old Section A, my grandfather used to have season tickets. Obviously, he wasn't a part of Section A. That was not there when he attended games. But this was kind of the first college baseball I ever watched. I remember growing up watching Hunter Moody, Scott Hawkins, watching Justin Robichaux, watching those guys. And so it was just a special place to me. There was some connections here. And, once they called and got the opportunity to come to camp and luckily I had a good day. They liked what they saw and gave me a scholarship and gave me an opportunity.
What did Coach Robe mean to you, not only as a player, but as a man?
I try not to get emotional when I talk about him, but he was like another father to me. The latter parts of my career here were up and down, and there were some things that, you start to go through just life stuff, dealing with obviously the injuries and the kind of the way my career had taken a sharp turn, amongst other things, health and different things like that. And, he was a big part of me making it through that, and I guess maybe as well as I did, or as easily as I did. And it wasn't easy. Like, it was really, he had a lot to do with that. And there was a lot of, at least the year that I was hurt and I had both surgeries and really couldn't do much, there was just a lot of conversations, just me and him. And obviously we had a level of respect and a relationship with each other prior to that. But, really those last 2 years, my senior and then redshirt senior year, and then obviously the summer right before the summer he passed, he just was like another father figure, man. And it really wasn't just me. I think we did have a unique relationship and a special relationship, but his door was always open to everybody, and I think that's what made him special.
Wrapping up our conversation with Gunnar Leger, the pitching coach here for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. He was an All-American here as well. Now that you're doing this, and look, you played under some of the greatest coaches that this state has ever produced, and now you're coaching underneath a guy that's one heck of a coach as well.
No doubt.
What have you learned in such a short period of time as an assistant coach that maybe you didn't know even as a player?
Yeah. The one thing I will say is the game happens, obviously from the outside looking in, it always looks easier from the outside. But the game happens quick as a coach. It can happen quick as a player too, but you're a little more in control, if you will, as a player when you're out there. And obviously you have some effect on the game as a coach. It's just with the play clock now or the pitch clock, things happen quick, and then also just being able to manage personalities, manage, a pitching staff, manage 20 different guys, and they all learn a different way. They all communicate a different way. Is probably the biggest learning curve for me. And I think, there's not that big of a generation gap between some of our guys, right? Like, I mean, Blake Marshall's 24, I'm 28. Like, we borderline could be friends, And I would say that we are. Obviously, we have a good relationship, but he's not much younger than me. And then we have 18-year-olds on this team, So there's a generation gap just there between our oldest and our youngest. And obviously, with the world that they grow up in is so different now, is just learning how to help them navigate that and managing personalities, managing development, and being able to communicate to different, really different generations, if you will, different types of kids that come from different backgrounds and things like that. What Coach Deggs is so good at is being able to motivate, being able to, just keep people going in the same direction. I think that's what makes them special, and that's what makes our culture special here.
Gunnar, appreciate the time, brother. Best of luck in tonight's game against Houston Christian University, and best of luck the rest of the season, including this big weekend series against Southern Miss. Brother, thank you for the time.
Yeah, thank you all.
That's Gunnar Leger, former All-American. He's the pitching coach now for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, top 25 ranked Louisiana Raging Cajuns, by the way. We got to take a timeout. When we return for the special edition of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh, as we broadcast live from the Teague, we'll have the man in charge of the football program. Spring practice wraps up this Saturday with the spring game. Coach Dez will join us live in person. You're listening to ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
Go sign up for our Rewards Club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
And we welcome you back into this special edition of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. We are broadcasting live from ML Teague Moore Field at Russo Park, a great view of the ballpark, which will play host to the Louisiana Raging Cajuns facing the Houston Christian Huskies later tonight. But right now, it's time to talk about a field that's located just a little bit down the block over in that direction. The football program finishing up spring practice. They'll have their spring game on Saturday, a modified version of it in the indoor facility due to, of course, the construction that's going on at Cajun Field. But we have with us head coach Michael Decimo. Coach, thank you for making the time for us.
Yeah, thank you all for having me. You guys are got a pretty good spot today to get a little work done, man.
Absolutely. We've been spoiled the last few weeks. We've been at Minute Maid. We've been here. It's been fun. So, you know, look, it's your third year in charge of the program now, and the spring – each year you've been here, there's been a unique set of circumstances involved with your roster and how things have gone. You had a year where you had no quarterbacks healthy and you were just trying to have somebody. You were out there throwing the football, and then you've had a year now where you have a couple guys back, but one of them, of course, has been a little bit slower to get back than maybe the others. What's it been like to try to navigate each spring and have just, again, just a different set of feels like pretty unusual circumstances every time?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it feels like it's unusual to other people. You know, I mean, everyone's got challenges every year that you got to go through, and you know, that's kind of part of it, is whenever you're in a position, you know, where you're in charge of a lot of people, and you've got a lot of people following your leadership, you gotta adjust, and you gotta adapt, and you gotta figure out the most fair way to do things for the whole team. And so, you know, for us, the most unique thing, I think, was last year, the quarterback situation and just the way that it was. But, you know, we found a way to make it work, you know, and we went out there and had a productive spring. This year has been the most normal off season that we've had since I got the job here. You know, I mean, my first year with the job was the first year of the portal and NIL, so that was something new to navigate. Certainly going into last year, you know, in the spring you had the injuries and all these things at quarterback. That was kind of a little bit of something that you really can't predict. So, yeah, this is the most normal spring we've had since I've been here, so we've enjoyed it. We've been able to really work in a normal setting with three groups where we got a lot of guys getting a lot of reps, and, you know, we've made progress in a lot of areas, certainly not where we want to be, but, you know, I'm pleased with it so far.
And you mentioned the quarterback situation, what it was last year, and this year it's obviously different than that. You go into it having Chandler Fields back, having Ben Wooldridge back. Those guys both have just, you know, unique enough stories to do an entire segment about.
Right.
And last year they were two of the three that played, with Zion Chris being in there as well, and he moves on. So, you know, it's not like you have to name a starter at the end of the spring game. Certainly you don't. But how do you go into a year like this saying Chandler's back and he's been here for, what, 6 years?
Mm-hmm.
Ben's been here for, you know, a long time as well. I think people forget he was here for the last couple of years, right, of Levi Lewis. Having those two guys both have a fair shot at everything, but also understanding that you've got more experience in that room than probably most teams in the country.
Yeah, I mean, we're fortunate. We've got two guys that have started and won games for us. You know, and they've both played really well at times. You know, I think Chandler last year, you know, really statistically played the best out of the three last year in the games that he played. And this spring, he's had a great spring. You know, for Ben, it's just been kind of a tough go with these injuries, you know. Now, the thing that, if you know him at all, the thing you respect about him more than anything is his level of engagement is unbelievable. I mean, he doesn't miss a thing. He doesn't, I mean, I'm not saying physically misses, like mentally, he doesn't miss anything. That's what gives him a chance to be able to come back and play like he did last year, even being off of injuries, you know. But you got to take the whole body of work. You got to go through it. And really, again, you got to figure out what's the best thing for your team. You know, it's been a little bit unfortunate that we've kind of had a quarterback battle every year. But some of it's good, too. I mean, if the team looks around, they see, well, these quarterbacks, right, that's, you know, the quarterback's always held to a different standard. If these guys are battling and competing every day for a spot, then I darn well better be on it because I'm going to have to do the same thing. So there's good in everything, you know. I mean, you got to find the good in it. But, you know, really pleased with Chandler. You know, for us, our focus has been between Lunch and Samari, who's going to be ready there in that role because, you know, Ben, we expect him to get healthy for the season. But, I mean, shoot, you know, the last 2 years we've had to play three quarterbacks, and I hope that trend is over. But, you know, the reality is that, you know, if you just sit there and say, you know, I mean, look, last year our first two quarterbacks got hurt. You know, nobody sits there and gives you a free pass and says, well, I mean, these guys lost their quarterback, you know. I mean, it's okay if they don't. I mean, that's not the way it works. You have to find a way to go out there and manufacture wins. So our focus has been getting those two guys to compete, to really get into the system, really learn it, and go out there and go run those groups that they're in. So, you know, Chandler's done a really good job. Those two guys have been up and down a little bit, which you expect, you know, for young players. But that's kind of where my focus has been as much as anything.
We're talking with Raging Cajuns football head coach Michael Desormeaux. Coach, looking at the spring game that's coming up on Saturday, you've had plenty of practices, and I'm kind of curious, can you give us a breakdown of the structure? Because I know when I was there helping the football team, it was Vermilion versus White as teams, but I know that other teams have changed around the country with the structure. I was kind of curious, what are y'all going with?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. Everybody asks about structures of spring game and stuff. You know, I mean, I think as a coach, you've got to decide what's best for your program. For us, we're in a spot where we're still going to play a game to a certain extent. Probably, you know, what I'm leaning towards, and obviously we got to get through, we have another practice, and we're supposed to get a couple guys back. You're always thin in a couple spots. And the last thing you want to do is make those guys that are practicing, stretch them too thin where they're at risk of being hurt. So right. You got to kind of manage those things. For us, the first half will be a competition period. We'll probably do like a team, a good-on-good deal in the red zone where we play for points. We'll do some one-on-ones in the pass rush, one-on-ones in the throw game for points, something in special teams. That'll be the first half. The second half, we're going to play a half. And we're going to let those guys go and go play a little bit. You know, typically for us, you know, last year we played a quarter and we played like 26 plays. So if we get about 50 plays in the scrimmage format, that'd be great. If it's a little bit less, that's okay. We'll get enough. But, you know, I mean, to me, I think that's what fits best for our team. We're good on the O-line as far as health goes, but we have a couple of key guys that are missing that, you know, are really good rotational pieces. You know, the starters for the most part have been healthy, you know, knock on wood, you hope to keep it that way. But, you know, naturally, you always have some injuries, some things that build up a little bit, and you don't want to stretch any of those guys too thin with it.
Yeah, and speaking of guys that will not be there at the spring game, Nathan Thomas, he's no longer with the program. Of course, he declared for the NFL draft. What does it mean for you to still have guys go out there and still be able to potentially get drafted?
Well, you know, I think that's what you – we sell the history that we have of development here. And you go back down the line, I mean, I saw a thing came out the other day. I think we had, 10 guys drafted in the last – since 2017. You know, you sell that to guys and that, look, if you come here and you do it the right way, you can make it. And it doesn't matter what position. I mean – you know, you go to Tracy Walker, that he had hardly any offers. I mean, Percy mm-hmm. Butler, all these guys that were under-recruited, under the radar. Nathan Thomas is a great example, though, right? He was a high school tight end, very under-recruited, came in here for, you know, for 3 years, did not play. His fourth year gets to play a little bit. Fifth year played pretty good. And, you know, here we go, right? And he's got a chance to get drafted, got a combine invite. So, you know, we want guys that want to be here. And, you know, it's hard in the landscape of what it is, but, you know, Pete Thamel just did a segment on Quinyon Mitchell, the kid from Toledo.
Yeah.
He stayed. Those guys took a chance on him. They signed him. He played really good for them. He decided to stay, and he's going to be a first-round draft pick. So, you know, yeah, we celebrate that. And I think for us it's a big deal because every kid in our locker room wants to play in the NFL. So for us to have these guys that are – draftable, that have draft grades, that are getting combine invites, that are playing these senior bowl games, that just says, hey, look, it's still here for you. You know, we have the formula. You have to do the work. And, you know, for Nate, it's been a long journey. You know, it's been a long journey for a guy that came in here and had a lot of development to do. He was behind an elite offensive line where four of the five starters are playing the NFL. He just kept working. And to me, that's something that's it's good for our program, for our kids that are in our program to see it. But I think it's a good story these days where you're seeing less and less of that, right? You're seeing guys that all of a sudden they start to play good. Well, they jump ship and go somewhere else, and it's like, well, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, we've had guys that have left here that have draft grades here. They went somewhere else, didn't play very good, and then they don't get drafted. So, you know, for us, it's a good thing, and it's something that we're going to continue to celebrate. I sure hope we get to hear Nate's name called. And, you know, certainly some of these other guys, like Neil Johnson and some of these other guys that hopefully they get, you know, get drafted. If not, hopefully they get these priority free agent deals. And we've had quite a few of those too. So we, yeah, I mean, we're proud that we consider ourselves a program of development. And I think the success we've had and the guys that have gone to the NFL and stuck, I think it speaks to that a little bit.
Coach, appreciate your time as always. Thank you for doing this. Should be fun to see y'all out there on Saturday. I know I'm excited to get over there, and season will be here before we know it.
Got a lot of work to do before then, but it'll be here quick.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys. Coach.
That's Coach Michael Decimo. We'll take a timeout here. We'll wrap up our number one of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh live from the Teague after this. Stay with us.
Back to the sports talk you not only want, but need. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Oh, man, tremendous first hour here of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as we've been broadcasting live from the Teague, the official name. And if we want to be official and efficient, it's ML Teague Moorfield at Russo Park. So you can call it Russo. You can call it the Teague. I still call it the Teague. Is that okay? Is that allowed?
I believe the Teague is certainly okay. Okay. That's for short.
I'm old.
There's always shortenings to longer phrases, longer words. For instance, Tulane basketball plays in the Fogelman Arena inside the Devlin Fieldhouse. It's quite a mouthful, if just like their baseball team plays at Greer Field inside Turton Stadium. So GFATS, that one kind of has an acronym that works, right?
I like that.
Tulane's baseball field, but
I mean, like for me, I go by RP3 instead, you know, because I mean, big, bald, just, bearded, beautiful one, that's a mouthful. It's just easier to say RP3.
And when you've got 2 hours a day, you can get into the, you know, the full government names like we do, but it doesn't mean if I see you on the street, I don't want to have to yell out seven words.
Raymond Parks the third! Right. That's Raymond Anton Parks the third, by the way. Speaking of people that like to go by shorter names, our guy, Blake Purser, better known as BP. He's back inside the EFCO Development Studios, holding it down for us, doing a tremendous job. Buddy, we have a poll question of the day. We've yet to get to it because we've been so jam-packed with all the great guests we've had here live at the Teague. Our poll question of the day, which Raging Cajun's Diamond team will host an NCAA regional? They're both in a great position to be able to do so. Is it just softball? Is it just baseball? Is it both or is it neither? Where do we stand on our results and any comments?
Well, so right now, just softball is leading at 47.2% of the vote. Both is coming in at second at 36.1. Just baseball, 2.8, so not a lot of faith that just baseball is going to get it done, and neither at 13.9% of the vote. John Paul Cajun Daddy did post a projection of the field of 32.
Shout out to John Paul.
This was from 11.7. That has UL going to the Texas A&M regional with Texas A&M, UL being the 2 seed, California at 3, and Texas Southern at 4.
And the 11.7 podcast, by the way, friends of the program, Ben Upton and those guys, named because of the number of scholarships for so long that have been associated with baseball programs. A lot of people thinking that's not very fair. Obviously, you have 35-plus players, 11.7 scholarships to divvy up. But shout out to the naming of their pod, which that rule may be changing. I think they're going to stick with the name because they've built themselves quite a following.
There we go. Keep those votes coming, though, on our poll. BP has something to say.
I was going to say, one more quick thing before we take the last break. There's a crow outside. Y'all either got to get him on the show or tell him to pipe it down. These constant interjections are not working for me, so y'all got to figure that out.
Yeah, well, it's kind of
God's country.
I'll have a
stern talking with him.
It's ungoverned. You know, I don't know if we're going to be able to get. I did talk to him. His media rep said he's pretty booked for this evening, so we'll see maybe later in the week. But that's the great outdoors, man. That's the beauty of it. We're sacrificing a little audio quality for nature being more of a part of the show. You know what I mean?
As the crow flies, as they say. Hour one is in the books. Hour two, we're going to kick it off with Damon Mason, Louisiana Raging Cajun football legend and assistant coach for the Louisiana Voodoo of the AFL. That's next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
This This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Welcome back into this special edition of RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh, as we're broadcasting live from MLT Moore Field at Russo Park for this special Raging Cajun edition of RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh. Hour one was tremendous. We had our today's specials, and then we had two great guests, Gunnar Leger, former All-American pitcher here for the Raging Cajuns, played under Tony Robichaud. He's now the pitching coach under Matt Deggs. And by the way, the Raging Cajun baseball team is ranked in the top 25. They got a game tonight against Houston Christian University. Good conversation there with Gunnar. And then we had Coach Dez, who's entering his third season at the helm of the Louisiana Raging Cajun football program. He was a star quarterback here as well. This hour, we're going to keep it going. Coming up half an hour from right now, how about former Terlings Catholic star, All-State player, two-time state champion, and a guy who came and manned shortstop for the Raging Cajun baseball team for 3 years, all-conference player. Now he's working his way up the minor league system. Hayden Cantrell will be joining us, talking about his career and how that's going, and, you know, getting his thoughts about this year's Raging Cajun team from afar. 15 minutes or so from right now, we're going to talk softball. Huge win last night for Jerry Glasgow's team as they took down LSU right behind us at Lampson Park. That could help them be able to host an NCAA regional. Woo! Good stuff there. Cody Juno, he's the voice of the Louisiana Cajun softball team. He's also sideline reporter for football. He'll be joining us to talk all about that. But we're going to kick off hour number two by talking to a man who is a legend. His jersey is retired. His name is inside Cajun Field as one of the few numbers that have been retired. He's in their Sports Hall of Fame. He would go on to be a tremendous player in the Arena Football League. He's still their all-time leading tackler in league history, a two-time AFL champion, and now he's serving as an analyst, an assistant coach for the Louisiana Voodoo, who kick off their season this Saturday inside Blackham Coliseum. It's our old friend, Damon Mason. Damon, good day to you, buddy. How are you, my friend?
RP3, I'm great, man. And that introduction, man, awesome. Thank you.
Well, that's what I'm here for, buddy. That's what I do. I try to make the people sound good. That way they keep coming back onto the show. But it's easy for you, my friend. It's easy for you. So, look, we're going to talk about what you're doing with the Louisiana Voodoo and getting back involved with the Arena Football League. But I want to go back and just talk about what Lafayette and what the Louisiana Raging Cajuns means to you. Take us back, man, back in the day when you were being recruited coming out of the La Place area. What made you decide to come and play football for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns back there in the 90s?
Oh, man, that's an awesome question. I say it's an awesome question because it gives me an opportunity to really be truthful to the listeners and all the Cajun fans, especially the young boys who are going through the recruiting process year after year. Honestly, man, you're talking about in the 1991-92, around my senior year, USL, the Raging Cajun was my last option. You know, like most of these young boys, my goal was to go big. Of course, being a Louisiana guy growing up, wanting to play for the Saints, wanting to play for LSU, I wanted to be a Bayou Bengal. That was my dream. But then once I realized that dream was not going to come to pass, I wanted to go to a top program. And then, you know, just time after time and door after door being closed, one coach at USL with the Raging Cajuns stayed with me, Coach Jeff Jordan, who recruited me, was the recruiting area. He just stuck with me. And to be very honest, man, he stayed with me so long, it was like the stroke of midnight. It was the stroke of midnight where I called him and made my decision. But even before I made the decision, I talked to a coach who was at Tulane. The Tulane defensive back coach left and went to Southern Mississippi. And so I wanted to go to Southern Mississippi. Again, I wanted to go to any school besides the Raging Cajuns. Don't know why, but, you know, like, again, my dream was to go bigger than you know, where I ended up going. The coach told me, he said, Damon, to be honest with you, man, the head coach here at Southern Mississippi hasn't even looked at your film yet. He said, if I was you, man, I don't want you to miss out on an opportunity. If I was you, I'd just take the opportunity that the Raging Kids are presenting you. I got off the phone with him, immediately called Coach Jeff Jordan, and that's how I made my decision to become a Raging Cajun. Didn't know nothing about Lafayette, didn't know nothing about the program, except that every week, at least once a week, this coach kept coming to Destrehan High School to come see me. And they've been following me for 2 years. And that decision turned out to be the best decision I made in my life, because as I posted on social media recently, I wanted to go to LSU, but my mom prayed that the Lord would send me where I was needed, not where I wanted to go. And the rest is history from there.
The rest is history, brother. And look, your journey is also kind of amazing in the fact that it was about a second chance opportunity and been given the fact of going back and finishing what you started, so to speak. I know we've talked about it before on the radio, but I'd love for you to share that again about, you know, hey, we live in an era now where guys transfer or just, you know, move on. You had an opportunity. You could have done the same thing. Instead, you had to, you know, get some things together. You did so, and you came back, and the rest is history. I'd love for you to be able to share your story there with the football program.
Definitely. Well, I come there as a highly recruited freshman, like every freshman does at every program. And once I got to the Raging Cajuns, all the freshmen that you're practicing, so it's fine because you're getting a lot of reps, you're getting a lot of publicity, you're getting a lot of notoriety. But then as soon as the upperclassmen came back to campus right before the start of school, you realize that, you know what, you're on the sideline, you're not getting the reps. You feel like you are really a freshman in high school instead of that star that you was as a senior at your respective high school. And so now you're trying to make a name for yourself. You're hanging out with the older guys, and you're doing things you never done before, good, maybe some even bad. But as I share with people, the thing that kept me focused was I had one goal. I wanted to play football. And I say that because I didn't do my best as a student, but I always did my best when I put on that helmet, when I put on my shoulder pads. So I get there, and I'm trying my best to impress the coaches. I'm complaining every day. I'm listening to my peers. I'm listening to the guys, you know, just talking negative. Saying, man, you can't go pro from this school. You can't do this. You can't do that. I'm telling my mom. You know, they're acting like they don't know who I am. They came set in my house. They talked to you guys. They told me this. They told me that. They made these promises, even though they make no promises. But they talk good to get you to sign a scholarship. Then once you get there, they forget about you. And as I share with young guys today, no, they don't forget about you. They just gonna make you earn what you think that you want. I wanted to play. I felt like I could play, but you still have to realize you are a student athlete. And as a student athlete, I wasn't taking care of my academics, but I was taking care of the athletic side of it. So when I fell into academic hardship, and I'll be very honest with everyone, I had a 0.3 or 0.4 GPA. I had 4 Fs and a C my first semester. So that was a wake-up call because now I'm on probation. I need a 2.0 because you're on a full scholarship. I ended that with a 1.9. The day I got my grades, came back to La Place, Louisiana, my mom looked at me. She just said, I'm thinking, my parents has always been strict. I've never had issues with grades before, so I don't know what they expect from my parents. My mom went to the Word of God on me. She said, well, damn, you know what? There's a lot of things I can say. There's a lot of things I can do. But not one time have I ever heard you thank God for giving you a scholarship. You kept saying, well, I should have went here, I should have went there, I should have went there. Instead of thanking God, I said, I'm grateful for the opportunity that the Raging Cajuns gave me by the grace of God with a full scholarship. And then she told me, well, you know what, sometimes you don't appreciate or we don't appreciate what we have until it has been taken away from you. And I don't know exactly how it happened, RP3, but it's like I want to say that day the phone rang, and then I never forget, it was Coach Edward Sheridan, who was an assistant coach. And his conversation went something like this. He said, Damon, how would you like to go to a junior college while you get your grades together? And I tell everybody the story. I said, all I heard was blah, 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 play football. As long as I can go to a JUCO and play football, that was all I wanted to do. So now, the rest of that story goes like this. My mother told me, she said, you see, they saw something in you that you don't realize that God gave you. You're not the only one who probably lost their scholarship or had grade issues, but I'm sure you might be the only one that they called and decided that, you know what, we see something in this guy or this kid that we need to help him get his grades together because I took care of my responsibilities as an athlete, not a student, as an athlete. So went to junior college. I went to the during the summer, had a 2.5. During the fall, I had a 3.0. I played football at Jones Junior College in Ellisville, Mississippi. And my mama simply said, now you mean to tell me that you had to go to another school and take the same courses that I had F in Lafayette, had a 2.5 and a 3.0. You say, you know what, God had a purpose for that. Because your mind was on one thing, but you wasn't focused on everything else. So he took that away from you to get you back focused. And the coaches called me every week. I played in a bowl game. They came to my bowl game. I played in a championship game in Mississippi. They came to a championship game. And it was like, just make sure you bring yourself back here. Now, I didn't know a lot about junior colleges. I just know that I made a name for myself, and I didn't realize that. I just know that the coaches did a lot to help me get myself together. I felt like I had some unfinished business. I wanted to right the wrong that was there. So my whole intention was to go back to Raising Cajuns no matter what. I didn't know. I really didn't know that I could have went anywhere else because your recruiting process starts all over again. And so I'm going to end that by saying this. So when I came back, after 6 months, when I came back, I was a cornerback. Remember, I'm in the Hall of Fame as a strong safety. What they told me was they changed my position. Again, I'm listening to my teammates, my peers. Man, they're messing over you. They're messing over you. I was so frustrated, RP3, that I called my defensive back coach, who I consider a mentor of mine, Coach Tim Rebo, who's the head coach at Nickel State. I said, Coach, I told him what was going on. I'm going to leave. And as I said, that was before the transfer portal. I wanted to transfer. I wanted to leave. He's the one who told me no. He's the one who made me realize, along with my mother, not my father, my mother, Coach Rebo told me, he said, they see something. You made a name for yourself there. You stay there. You're not leaving. You made a name for yourself there, and you're going to stay there. He told me no. I said, if you want me, I'm coming to Nichols. He said, nope, stay where you are. I stayed there, and again, the rest is history.
We're speaking with Damon Mason, former Louisiana Raging Cajun great. Damon, I want to transition there as we talk about, you know, some of the ways that you got into the game and now some of the new opportunities that you're seeing. You ended up having a great career in the Arena Football League, and now it's coming back to an extent. And I know you're involved with the Louisiana Voodoo a little bit. What's that been like, you know, kind of getting your feet wet back into that game that you played for so long, and, you know, how have you enjoyed it so far?
It's been good, and I'm going to try my best to be very honest and not get the traditional answers. It's been very good. It's been easy. I just turned 50, you know, and I want to say that because at this stage of my life, guys, it's like drinking water. It's like riding a bike. It never left me. But to have the opportunity is a blessing. Didn't know how it was going to come. I can only thank my teammate from UL, Coach Shiver, for thinking of me. Actually, him and I were thinking about it at the same time. I'm not down there. I'm not going to be down there full time. But he wanted me to be a part of the program. I wanted to be a part of the program for so many reasons. While it was in Lake Charles, it's a blessing that they're in Lafayette now. And so what I'm doing with the guys is, and I had a conference call with the team last night, just trying to talk to them from a whole different perspective, not being there and being, besides Michael Lewis on paper, I mean, I played 14 years. I think Mike played only 1 year before he had his awesome opportunity to go play at the Saints. But 14 years is with the career I had, I tell as I coach high school, also 14 years, I tell all the kids, I'm a football player first, I'm a coach second. I'm going to give you guys every aspect of my life from my own personal experience. And now, and it's even more magnified when you're dealing with young men who are going down that same path that I went on, so as I shared with them last night. I said, look, it's brand new to you guys, but it's not brand new to me. There's only two guys who are really veterans. That's Eric McIntosh and Tyron Lewis. And so like I told them, I expect you guys to be the type of player that I was. And the type of player I was that leader figure, that big brother figure to help these guys understand what's going on. yes, you have coaches, but don't forget that you are grown men. You are professionals. So for me, it's just all about remembering all the trials and tribulations I went through, the opportunities that were presented to me. The NFL, after a great career in college, the NFL didn't give me an opportunity. I went to Canada, and I got cut, so that opportunity was cut short. Then I came home and continued to work and pray and put my faith to work, and the opportunity presented itself 6 months later in 1998, and I won the Arena Bowl championship my first year with the Orlando Predators, who's going to be one of the rivals with our Voodoo. So I'm just sharing these stories with those young men who are part of the Voodoo there in Lafayette, as well as high school kids that I try to help out year after year, month after month. And I realize now at this stage of my life, once again, that these stories that I share with them, my experiences, both positive and negative, in some shape, form, or fashion, these kids, these young men, are going to face their own adversity, either something like mine or nothing like mine, but as a student athlete or a professional athlete who's trying to elevate and excel at their sport, at their game, that's where I honestly excel at. And I have the proof, the stats, the accolades to support that.
Damon, always appreciate you making the time. Buddy, the next time you come into town, you back in Lafayette, we'll have to get together, have you on the show inside the studio, grab a bite to eat and everything. But I appreciate you making the time and keep up all the tremendous work that you're doing coast to coast, my friend.
Definitely, man. Sounds like a plan. I appreciate the opportunity always.
That's Damon Mason, Louisiana Raging Cajun football legend. He's in the Louisiana Athletics Hall of Fame. His jersey is retired, and now the AFL player legend is now going to be serving as an analyst for the Louisiana Voodoo, who kick off their season this Saturday inside Blackham Coliseum. We got to take a timeout. When we return, we'll shift gears to Raging Cajun softball. Huge win last night against LSU. We'll talk to the man who was on the call, Cody Juno, play-by-play voice for Raging Cajun softball team and football sideline reporter, joins us next right here on RP3, D'Lo and Mesh.
Helping you get through your workday. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
Welcome back into RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, here as we are broadcasting live from the Teague. It's been an exciting day already. Plenty of great guests. Damon Mason there. Great stuff all the way back to his recruiting days and into what he's doing now with the Arena Football League and what he already accomplished with the league in the last, you know, really what was an incredible career for him. Still the all-time leading tackler there in Arena Football League history. And we'll see what the Voodoo look like in the next couple of weeks coming up to that. So for now, we are going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the Louisiana Raging Cajun softball team. They got a big-time win against LSU last night. They really needed it as far as trying to build that hosting resume out even further, and they've been on such an incredible run ever since that Oklahoma win, which kind of shot them in the right direction. And we'll now talk with the voice of Raging Cajun softball, Cody Juno, who joins us now. Cody, thank you for making the time, buddy. May not have Cody.
Yeah, but I think overall it was a great performance.
It was,
because, like I had mentioned for today's special, they got down early against LSU, and you had kind of seen it happen last week on the road against the Tigers and against Beth Carina squad, and you were kind of worried, are we going to see more of the same? Well, we didn't really have to worry about that, because you go down 2-0 at the top of the first, Sam Landry's not having her best stuff, you go to Chloe Riacetto, and she gets you out of the jam, gets you to the bottom of the first, and you're thinking, okay, how are we going to be able to overcome this? Because it's not like it's a huge deficit. You're only down 2 runs, and you got 7 innings to work with. But how are you going to be able to do that? Because you're going against a good LSU squad. Well, you didn't have to worry about that by the end of the first inning, because they were able to put up 6 runs, and I know a couple of them were walks, and I know that the ump, he was calling that pretty tight last night.
He was
calling that strike zone very tight. But you still saw plenty of offense, and it was a lot of early scoring. And eventually, Chloe, she was easily the player of the game. I know that she didn't have the strikeouts like how we see with LP Longevin for baseball, how he's able to just get a crazy amount of strikeouts in just so little innings of work. But she was able to really work the strike zone. She was able to work calls, and she got plenty of groundouts and flyouts to help with the defense. I mean, we saw plenty of crazy catches, including from Matty Hayden, especially later in the game.
We did, and we now do have Cody Juneau. Only going to have a couple minutes with Cody, but we've got him now. And so, Cody, last night, obviously massive win over LSU. We knew what was on the line there for the Cajuns. The hosting resume is now that much better. What was your take, and what did you get out of Coach Glasgow's team kind of putting together one of their best performances of the year?
Hey, guys. Good to be with you. I think my first takeaway was just the environment that Lampson Park was, the sellout crowd over 2,500. It was rocking from the first pitch, all the way through that final strikeout. And it was dynamic. It was two really, evenly matched ball clubs taking the field. And Cajuns gave up those two runs in the first, but then responded and didn't really let off the gas pedal there. And I think it's just another sign of this ball club shaping into its best form as they head down the stretch.
And I'm glad you mentioned it, Cody, because it was referenced on the TV broadcast a lot about, we've seen great crowds at Lampson and we see them often, but last night seemed like another level, and it's great because this is a team. It's so funny, too, and we've talked with you about it. There was a point in the year where this group just looked like they were going to fall short of all expectations. I mean, they were struggling to beat teams that we didn't think were even going to challenge them. And now here we are. Not only have they continued the most unbelievable streak in the history of athletics, in my opinion, in the Sun Belt Series 1, you go on the road to Texas State and you get 2-3 there, and now you split with LSU. So, in your mind, where is Coach Glasgow's team mentally now that, some of those goals kind of got put in the rear view for a while? Because it was like, you know what, we don't even have to worry about hosting. We need to worry about winning a game tonight. With that back into play, how have they managed that kind of swing in expectations?
Yeah, I mean, remember, this club was 9-12 at some point in time and really coming out of that Oklahoma series, right? You get that win on that Sunday and things have just, I think it's 25 of 28 since then. And I think you've seen a couple of things. You've seen a steady lineup, really with the exception of right field. Occasionally you'll have positions in the batting order change. But with the exception of right field, the other eight positions have been solidified. And, moving Brooke Ellis at the third base and inserting Cecilia Vasquez at the Cajun shortstop position has provided much-needed stability, right? And, I mean, they were, kicking balls left and right early in the year that led to while the offense was struggling, so you weren't able to overcome that. And they've gotten all of that figured out. Now they're just going out there and they're having fun. They're playing ball and, the chips will fall where they may at the end of the year, right, whether they host or not or get sent out somewhere else. Just joking with the LSU broadcast team as they were leaving last night. One of the things they said was, I hope we don't see you guys in a regional. I said, too. I said, let's just meet up in Oklahoma City and call it a day there. So we'll figure out where the hosting ends up at the end of the day, but the Cajuns have certainly put themselves in a position to be in that conversation and have squarely gotten the season turned around. And it's been fun to watch day in and day out. Those young ladies continue to work to get better and see the fruits of those labor start to pay off.
And, Cody, looking at tonight's matchup, it's not like it's going to be any easier because I know LSU is a really good squad. But so is McNeese. You're going to be on the road tonight in Lake Charles, as some of us call it, Chuck Vegas. Let's just talk about a quick preview of tonight's matchup because it's a good one.
Yeah, it'll be the second meeting between two teams. Cajuns took a tough one, a 2-1 victory back at Lampson Park in early May, and so it was March the 13th. And so, again, I think the Cajuns were just starting to come out of that funk, right? The victory over McNeese gave them their 15th of the year, put them at 15-12. And, after last night's victory, Cajuns now stand at 34-15. So it's a huge RPI game as we talk about the ability to host and what that may or may not look like, given, as you mentioned, going on the road to Texas State and taking 2-3 there and handling that. So this is another tough test for the Cajuns, one I don't expect them to overlook. I think that the high of last night's win probably sits more with the fan base, as it should, right? I think this team is very even-keeled. They've never tilted one way or the other. Through the ups and downs, the early season struggles, they stayed the course. And so it's going to be another, you know, Magnese will pitch it. They'll play defense, right? Ball tends to kind of fly out of that park there in Lake Charles. And so, you know, depending on what the wind is doing, Cajuns are going to have to bring their A game. And, you know, I expect probably to see Sam Landry get the start again after, you know, just going 2 1/3 last night. And so we'll see if she can have a bounce-back performance. But, again, if the goal is to host, this is a game that can't be overlooked by any means. And so when the Cajuns and Cowgirls get together, it's always a fun time and usually a tough and tight time.
Cody, we appreciate your time as always, brother. Safe travels. Good luck on the call tonight, and we will catch up with you again soon.
Yeah, guys, appreciate it.
There he is, Cody Juno, play-by-play voice of Raging Cajun Softball. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, Hayden Cantrell, former Louisiana shortstop, will join us to talk about his career and the current Cajuns team. This is RP3 D'Lo and Mesh live from the Teague.
The biggest headlines in the world of sports are discussed here. ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
And we welcome you back into a special Wednesday edition of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. Here we are broadcasting live from Teague Moore Field at Russo Park. The Raging Cajuns having themselves quite a baseball season, and it's time to turn back the clock a little bit, talk to a former Raging Cajun star. We've had him on this program before. Hayden Cantrell played shortstop for the Cajuns, now is in the Chicago Cubs minor league system, playing for the AA affiliate, the Tennessee Smokies. Hayden, it's been a while, man. Appreciate you coming back on for us.
What's up, gang? Always happy to be here.
So, you know, Hayden, look, I want to start off. We're going to get into some of the Cajun stuff. I know you've been following this team, especially before your season got underway, and I'm sure you had some more time on your hands. But, you know, your career since we last talked to you has taken a couple more turns even, and now you're with the Cubs organization. You're sent there to the AA affiliate in Tennessee. What's it been like getting used to another city? I know this is, you know, it's kind of par for the course for you. You've been around in your time in the minor leagues.
I sure have, but, you know, I'm enjoying this. I've been in this league 2 years ago, so kind of the same feelings. I've been around since then. But, yeah, this is a really fun team. Lots of really big prospects on this team, a bunch of guys who are going to get it done for the Cubs or some other teams here in the future. So I'm just happy to be a part of it.
And, you know, a few days ago, Hayden, I was able to share it on social media. You came up to the plate in a pretty big moment there early on in your Smokies tenure, ended up hitting a two-run walk-off homer to get your team the victory. You know, obviously that had to be a special moment for you. Is it even more special to do it early on as you're kind of settling in? You're making friends with everybody again as you have to every time you're on a new team. What does a moment like that kind of coming through in the clutch do for, you know, your spot on the team, with the guys around in the locker room?
That's a really interesting perspective, because I would actually kind of agree with you there. You know, I am still kind of new to this group. You know, I definitely have some boys, you know, some new friends of mine that I love going to the field with. But, you know, I never really got to experience the season with these guys quite yet. You know, spring training is one thing, but playing at 7 p.m. on six times a week is really what we're doing. So, it was just really good to be able to provide for my team, get to show off, I guess, showcase, you know, how I can help us win ball games late.
And, you know, along those lines, Hayden, you know, how difficult has it been or how challenging has it been to adjust? And as you mentioned, this is a league that you've been familiar with now for a couple of years back with the AA team. But how difficult is it to go up and down? I know some of these leagues are a lot more hitter friendly, some are a lot more pitcher friendly, and you get at some point, I'm sure you have some old scouting reports, but guys are going up and down. Like, how has that part of it been for you as a hitter trying to, you know, continue to work your way up the organization?
Yeah, as far as hitting goes, you know, every year there's new metas, you know, like in Call of Duty, but there's new metas as far as pitching goes, as far as cut slider guys or vert heater and curveball guys. So right now, you know, these are a bunch of new guys I'm facing. I think this is a little bit younger group of pitchers I've faced than the last time I was in this league. So but just like every week, you know, some organizations, you know, they have philosophies that you pick up on their tendencies, blah blah blah, but you know, each week there's new arms to face and there's new plans to bring to the table as far as how you're going to execute on them. So you know, it's just a fun challenge every day. And, you know, like every other year, it's just as important to kind of develop some consistency in the approach you know, so that you can start, you know, getting some big sums of hits and throughout the weeks, you know, without giving at bats away.
And for those who haven't been keeping track, Hayden off to a great start this year early on, but already hitting 350 with a couple homers. I wanted to ask you about a current shortstop for the Cajuns, because that was your position, and you've obviously gone down as, you know, one of the really talented players to come through this program under Coach Robichaux and then Coach Deggs at the end there. Kyle DeBarge has really been making a name for himself. He's climbing the draft board rankings, much like you did in your, you know, second, third season with the Cajuns. What have you seen from him as a leader and as a player on the field that maybe reminds you of yourself and what makes him special?
Yeah, Kyle DeBarge is a very special leader in that clubhouse. You know, he reminds me a lot of my role model, Blake Trahan, a lot. I got to go out to practice with these guys throughout the spring and the fall, something I haven't really done since I've been a professional, but he is a voice that matters at practice, guys listening to what he has to say. He has, you know, he's going to give guys the tips that they need. He's going to motivate guys to be better. So as far as the leadership, as leadership qualities go, he's as sharp as it gets. And I think his tools and his gameplay are speaking for themselves right now. So I myself can learn a lot from watching him play. He's, you know, it's part of the reason why I turn on the TV and watch these guys so often. So hopefully, you know, we can keep this being a place where great shortstops continue to play for years along the way, but he's definitely one of the best.
We're talking with Hayden Cantrell. He was an All-State MVP, two-time state champion at Turlings Catholic. He was drafted, first player ever drafted in Turlings Catholic history, coming out of high school in baseball, opted to play for the Raging Cajuns, where he had a star-studded career, and now is making his way up through the minor league system to get to the show. He joins us here on RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. I want to go back to your high school days, brother. I remember covering you as you guys fell short in the state championship game when you were a sophomore, but then you guys were able to turn around and win back-to-back state championships. It's the baseball playoffs right now back here, back home for high school. What did your time at Turlings, what did that mean to you, especially the success that you had personally, but also what those Rebels had together as a unit?
Yeah, that was – I definitely draw on those experiences probably more than any others at this point in my life. I had an interview a couple of days ago, and somebody asked me what are the biggest moments you cherish, or what is one of your just favorite moments you remember? And I always talk about years like 2015, 2016, 2017. It was a group of young men who were gonna find a way to get the job done, win games. And, you know, there were players on that team, maybe not as skillfully talented in this game, but there were guys who pushed me through workouts, you know, harder than ever, guys who pushed me to my limits. And, you know, I really draw from those experiences. There were guys playing selfless for each other, really doing really adult-like commitment-type things to accomplish challenges. And that's what we knew it. We were trying to get done by the beginning of the season. We lost that first year probably because I was on the mound my first year. No, I'm just joking. Those last 2 years, we were able to get it done. But it all started from when I was a freshman. There were seniors who taught me and showed me the ropes. When I was a sophomore, you know, there were seniors who you know, helped me get the job done the right way. When I was a junior, there were seniors who led the right way. And when we were seniors, I felt like we did a good job of that as well. So it was a group of young men willing to commit to things that the most high school kids wouldn't commit to. Maybe extra hours where we were going to volunteer ourselves to get better after practice, or maybe it was making sure we showed up an hour and a half before we were supposed to be at the field because we want to get the field ready. It was just a championship mindset all the way around. So I always look back on those days, and on days when I'm maybe not as motivated, I remember what 15-year-old me was going to do to get the job done. So, those are probably my most important years, honestly.
You would go on to play for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, and you played for one of the greatest to ever do it, Tony Robichaux, the late great one, Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. But what was it like to play for Robe?
That
me and Rose's relationship kind of started kind of before that. My dad my dad's first year was Rose's first year also. So and my dad had gone through his own adversities in life and always had Rove as a father figure kind of helping him, you know, navigate those paths. So growing up, my dad always viewed Coach as obviously one of them, as a very important figure in his life, and always kind of whenever there was opportunities, he would kind of remind me. So by the time I stepped there at school, I was very excited to go and earn, you know, with the possibility to earn a spot. That's all I could really ask for. I was really honored to have that opportunity. And then, you know, as I got to play for him, he was kind of trusting me with more leadership roles and, you know, trying to be the link between the hitters and the pitchers. And, you know, and maybe we had some conversations throughout the weeks here and there, step by the office. You know, how are the boys doing? What do you got, sort of thing. So those were great days. And it was a shame I didn't get to finish my career with him. But I'm very grateful for all the time we got to spend together. And, yeah, that was by no means a slight to Coach Deggs. That was a great year itself. But as far as Rove is considered, you know, we lost him too soon. But we are definitely honored to have had the time we did have.
I want to ask you about that year last year, because it was just such an emotional year. Everyone was still grieving, the fan base, you, the players, the passing of Rove, and then Matt Deggs returns back to the program. And, oh, by the way, on top of it all, there's the global pandemic that, you know, essentially shortens the season. What was that like for you as a veteran player? And what did you learn in your short time with Coach Deggs?
Yeah, but my transition period happened while I was out in the Cape Cod, and Coach passed over the summer, and I came home for the funeral, and it was kind of like, I guess there's other things tied to it that were unexpected for me. I remember talking to Dr. Maggard, and you know, because that's just, you know, we needed a new guy also. So we had the funeral, and that was very sad, but it brought a lot of us former players, old and new and current, all together. And I thought that was a really unique experience. So when Coach Deggs came in the fall and we all showed up, we all felt we were in the best hands possible. It was weird, I guess you could say, you know, living in a Lafayette where Coach Rove wasn't the baseball coach. That was never a life I've lived. I've never known anything other than that. So, but we all showed up, and it was, you know, they run the program in a, you know, slightly different way, but the way it is about excellence and our own personal accountabilities to ourselves and our teammates was the same sort of thing, the same type of program. So we came in and Coach Deggs laid out the plans for us, and we didn't get to see it through, unfortunately, but you know, there was definitely some you know, there's guys coming here that were recruited by a coach who's not there anymore. So, you know, as an older guy, that's like a different part of the experience that you're trying to, you know, get guys back under wing. You know, it's a lot of trust and faith, but you know, that's why it shows why it was the right decision hindsight. But there's a lot of players and there's a lot of newcomers, you know, unsure about their future as a college athlete. So as far as the fall goes, that's kind of, you know, getting everybody on the same plan. And that's what Coach Deggs did so well from the get-go. We all got on the same page pretty dang soon. And, you know, that when you have tragedy strike like that, that is the best way to move forward. And I felt like we gave it our best go. You know, we didn't start the way we wanted to in the season, but we had the personnel and we had the grit and we had the care more than anything to get going, you know, as we were about to step into conference play. But we didn't get to quite see it through. So that was, it was just a weird time in our lives. You know, never has there been a stoppage of daily activities for months as we has. So it was weird and unfortunate. So, but, you know, definitely grateful for those experiences.
We're wrapping up our conversation with former Louisiana Raging Cajun and current Tennessee Smoky Hayden Cantrell. Hayden, I want to look at this year's group because Matt Deggs, they're 31-11, and they're moving up in the RPI rankings, and they're currently ranked top 25 in the nation. What are your thoughts on this 2024 version of Cajuns baseball?
This group reminds me a lot of, I think, the conference tournament team that played the year before I got there. I remember as a fan, you know, talking as a fan, where I always thought those guys were going to get a chance to get it done with Gunner as a junior and those guys. And then prior to that, you know, if you watch run back old 2014 games, guys that offensively execute and lots of different avenues, and then you got pitching staff that's just really strong on the back end, lots of really good starters. So, you know, these guys have the pieces to definitely put it together. Even taking last weekend, where some people may view that as a letdown, you know, against Coastal Carolina. But, you know, one thing when you watch an offense like that, you know, it doesn't matter if they're down three. You never think this team is going to lose the game. And I think that's what all the great teams have. You know, at the end of the day, when postseason baseball rolls around, who has that fire potential? Who has the ability to get on fire throughout the rest of the game from innings 3 to 9, because sometimes those postseason games is going to be a lot of high scoring. There's going to be a lot of pitchers. So I know the way Coach Deggs runs his team, that his guys are all ready, all the guys on the bench. There's more than 9 guys offensively who can definitely do damage. And I think that's going to really help as the postseason turns this way. So I look to them to continue going strong here in conference. And then, you know, in the postseason, I really see them as a team that's going to really be able to, you know, extend their potential, if that makes sense. You know, be able to play a better brand of baseball whenever it's on the line, because that's what I think these guys do the best. So it's an absolute joy every single time I get to turn these guys on. If I'm not playing and I get to watch the game, so I'm always pumped to do that.
Well, Hayden, I really appreciate you doing this, buddy. I know your schedule's so busy during the season here, but best of luck to you. I look forward to keep...
Go check out our YouTube channel at ESPN_SWLA for the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN Southwest Louisiana's sports station on YouTube.
Wow, what a day it's been here at the Teague as we have broadcasted live RP3 D'Lo and Mesh here at ML Teague Moore Field inside Russo Park. The batting cage is coming out, getting set for some pregame festivities that'll be get going in just a couple hours because they got a 6 o'clock first pitch. Lance Berkman's bunch, the Houston Christian Huskies, coming in. They got themselves a win over Stephen F. Austin. It was a little 2 o'clock first pitch yesterday over in Houston, and I got to watch a good bit of that game. I'll tell you what, the Stephen F. Austin Lumberjacks are struggling this year. They got 6 wins. I don't know if you've been locked into them, RP3. I know that's usually appointment watching for you. But the Lumberjacks are like 6-35 this year. It's been a tough year, but Houston Christian's been doing a little better than that, and they got a win over SFA yesterday afternoon. And they'll be coming into Russo Park tonight looking to do some damage against a Cajuns team that's looking to keep that momentum steady even after the series loss against Coastal. They've got eyes on, you know, pretty big lofty goals in the next few weeks.
Look, for the Huskies, they come in and they'd love nothing more to get a midweek victory over a top 25 ranked opponent. So, you know, they're going to be locked in. They're in, you know, the middle of the pack, a little below the middle of the pack in the Southland Conference standings. So it's going to be, you know, they're going to be locked in. They're going to be ready to go. Lance Berkman is trying to turn things around there for the Huskies, the former Houston Astro great. Just a reminder, make sure to keep it locked in tonight as we're going to have Houston Astros baseball right here against the Cubs. Former Raging Cajun great Spencer Arrighetti will be taking the bump. We'll have pregame Astro launch with Robert Ford and Steve Sparks for you, and then we'll also make sure to have the game live from Wrigley Field, so that'll be a cool environment, and hopefully Spencer will be able to get win number one up in the show.
Yeah, and a 6:40 start, a little bit of a weird start time there, Wrigley Field. They do things by their own rules in Wrigleyville. So, yeah, and look, for the Astros, boy, do they need it. I mean, they need a win, and we've talked about it. And that's, you know, I think they did a good job on the broadcast last night. Todd Callis, Jeff Blum, those guys, you know, saying, look, when you're playing poorly, and Brian Bogusevic, former Tulane great, who is on part of the postgame show, he said it too. Like, the difference is we know there's some things that aren't perfect right now and some guys that aren't healthy and some pitching stuff. You got to do enough to be winning games in the meantime, though. It doesn't mean you have to win all of them, but you got to be playing much closer to 500 ball when you're struggling than playing, you know, 7-17 ball, which is what they've done through 24 games. So it's still super early, and we're going to keep saying that. We're going to probably get sick of saying that, but
yeah,
you got to get going at some point. Why not tonight? Why not maybe Spencer give him a burst and maybe you get the offense? Again, last night you give up 5 in the first with JP and 2 balls that again, the second one just carried with the wind blowing. You go, okay, our offense gets to play with the win too. And they couldn't put up runs. They scored 2 in the whole game. So that's where it's like, look, JP had what I would call a grown man start last night where he gets shellacked in the first inning.
Yep.
But he knows the bullpen's tax, and he gives you through 5 innings still. He still found a way to get you there. Offense didn't back him up. So we'll see if they can get things together.
So we'll hope that the other former Louisiana College baseball star will be able to get the dub tonight for the Stros. Want to thank all of our guests to making this special. Shout out to Raging Cajun Athletics for making this happen as we broadcast live from the Teague. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back on tomorrow, 11-1. Up next, it's the Jordy Holtberg Show with the blonde bomber himself, Jordy Holtberg. That's all coming up next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.